You've recently filed your letter of intent to run for re-election, and I guess maybe a good place to start would be just kind of looking back at the last portion of the session and your first kind of go around in this whole thing, and why you decided to give it another go.
Well, this last year was a really real big learning experience. Things didn't work out the way that I had anticipated they would at the beginning of the session, or just after election, and that's in reference to the reorganization that had to happen. The dysfunction that happened, I think, has been a good learning environment. If for nothing else, this is the way we don't want to do it in the future. I feel like there was a job left half done if I wasn't to seek re-election and try to do better next time. And we still have this giant problem of what to do long term with our finances and our state spending in our state. And so I've learned so much, and I have so much more to learn. It seems like I'm not going to learn it if I don't throw my hat in the ring and continue on. So.
In talking about the sort of the dynamic and the majority party and all those different things, what are you looking forward to trying to do or bridges to try to build to try to avoid some of those things like we saw last year that you would like to try to avoid?
Well, I am always willing to have conversations with any one of the legislators that are in the legislature. I think the common denominator amongst all of our conversations is Governor Dunleavy. And there is just a visceral dislike for him, both from members in the House and members in the Senate, that is just kind of a almost a litmus test, so to speak. If you support the governor, then we can work together. If you don't support the governor, then we're not working together. And I don't see any evidence that that has changed yet. But you know, I could be surprised, and we'll get down there here in a few weeks, and things have changed. And that would be pleasant. I mean, that would be a really a pleasant surprise, and would be good for the state.
I'm curious how you would describe your relationship with House leadership and some of those members that do hold that up as a litmus test, you know, whether that's right or wrong.
The relationship, I would say, is somewhat adversarial. That's how I would describe it. People don't like to point to political parties or caucuses as a way to get things done. We would like, you know, I hear it spoken all the time, we just need to get rid of the parties and get rid of the caucuses and just get in there and get things done. The reality is, we always, human beings, always form ourselves around like-minded people. We form teams, and that is just the way that it is. And that, unfortunately, is what the sticking point is in the House, is that the teams are just so, you know, this isn't anything new, right? We're seeing this at the federal level as well. They're just so polarized that getting things done is an extreme challenge.
I do want to move on to the budget. The governor released preliminary budget and it looks like the fight this year is not going to necessarily be over budget reductions, that those battles have sort of been waged a little bit. It's sounding like this session is going to be focused a lot more, even maybe even more so than last year, on the PFD. And you've been pretty clear about your stance on how that should all on how that should all work out. How are you hoping things take shape in terms of the budget, the PFD, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, I think nobody wants to talk about cuts because it was such a controversial or negative thing last time. But we can't solve our long-term fiscal problem without talking about reduction of state spending. And the reason is our state government is funded by three main sources. One of those sources is under our control or our influence more than the other two, and that is our domestic GDP, our economic growth, or our capacity to produce in our state. And when you increase our economic capacity within the state, that means you see an increase in revenue for the state. And if you take a long-term approach to how to fund state government, and keeping in mind that we've had a decline in our economic GDP, then the answer is not taxing the private sector more to continue spending. The answer is growing our economic capacity to meet the need So the question is going to be, what do we do now in the short term to influence, positively influence, growth for the long term? And in the same vein, what must we not do now to negatively impact our ability to grow our economy going forward? Because long-term growth needs to be the focus, not an immediate balance of this current 2021 budget.
What
that is a goal. That is something that needs to happen. But we cannot do that and jeopardize long-term growth.
What do you see as the key to that part? That's the part that I'm interested in too, is how do you, you know, you kind of measure out where's the point at which we're doing more damage than good when it comes to, you know, cutting the budget or deregulation or whatever it might be. What do you see as the key to, I guess, for lack of a better term, sort of stopping the bleeding and making sure that we can maintain where we're at? And there's, you know, sort of there's the basement. We've got that figured out. What's the key to establishing that part of it?
Yeah, so that is going to be the million-dollar question. That is the judgment call that we're going to have to make, is to when is enough spending enough and when is too much? ICER, back in the beginning of 2019, put out some figures on what would happen job-wise and income-wise in a state with a whole host of different solutions to the budget deficit. And I don't know that I fully trust the numbers that ICER is putting forward, but the concept of a tax and a budget cut both impacting the local economy, the current economy, is the point that we need to focus on. And which one of those two options, a new tax or a new cut, has the least negative impact to long-term growth? If you put long-term growth as the focus and not in just the focus of getting through this budget, then it constrains what our options are. And this is why I'm saying we have to still be continuing to talk about the reductions in the state spending, because I don't think you can get to long-term growth without addressing the state spending. If you compare the size of our state, I mean the population and the GDP, the economy, to other states that are similar, North Dakota, South Dakota, Vermont, you will see that their spending levels are significantly lower than Alaska's spending levels. And so we just are spending too much. That's the reality. Nobody wants to face it because it's a negative thing to tell people they're going to lose their job or that there's going to be these services that have to be addressed some other way. But that's the reality. We have to continue that conversation for the long-term health of the state.
I think that we're seeing that conversation play out sort of in real time. You think about things like, you know, shifting resources around at the Silvertip Maintenance Station and some of the things that's, you know, some of the ways that people have been impacted that way. Those are the sorts of changes that come from these sorts of budget, these budget changes.
You're absolutely right. One of the conversations may be, can we save a few million dollars by consolidating our school districts? Can we get similar or better results in education with fewer overhead costs from districts? That's a legitimate question that needs to be answered. If the answer is yes, then that's something that we need to talk about, and that falls into the category of some sort of a cut. But if we're not really willing to look at cuts, then we're never going to see that as an option. So that's why I say we have to continue to talk about the cuts.
Yeah. Again, looking at the governor's proposed budget and its sort of its reliance on drawing from, you know, basically savings accounts to pay out a PFD and keep spending levels sort of where they're at. How do you feel about drawing from savings to maintain?
I think it's a bad idea. I think if we are looking our kids in the face and we say we're going to draw out a savings instead of reducing our spending at the state level, that doesn't set a very good example. And it certainly doesn't, it flies in the face of all of our families and the budgets and the way we deal with finances in our families and how we would teach our kids. If I'm looking at not enough money to pay my bills, then I've got to trim my bills. I got to trim my expenses somewhere. And that is just the reality. We don't want to face it at the state level because of politics, but it is unwise to drain our savings accounts for everyday, you know, those things are supposed to be for emergency use. And this is not an emergency. This is us unwilling to face the difficult facts of reducing our spending.
Just on the way out, anything else that, you know, as we, again, looking ahead to the start of the legislative session, things that folks ought to know or ought to be thinking about or paying attention to?
Yeah, so I'm putting my hat in the ring to run again. It's at a cost to myself and to my family. And I would hope that the people in this district would share that burden with me through the participation in the process. We will have hearings in the Finance Committee, and we need to hear from the people in this district and throughout the state as to what they think is important. It is vitally important that you figure out what the phone number is to the committee hearing and call in or send your email in and voice your opinion. It does matter. And I would leave that as an encouragement to everybody out there that this is self-government. And yes, you send a representative, but we need to hear from you.